There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host. Today on the program, the drive to save the internet as we know it, a diverse coalition of people and groups are coming together to try and convince Congress to put into law something known as network neutrality to preserve the internet as you know it, free to download anything, view or listen to anything you like without any restrictions by your internet service provider. It's a rough road, and we'll be talking about that today. And of course, we'll catch up with other things going on in our media environment with some Media Geek headline news. That's first up. Do stay tuned. Even though the Bush administration has named its nominee to fill the vacant seat on the FCC, that commission is still one commissioner short, leaving Chairman Kevin Martin without the crucial Republican majority he needs to give him leverage on his agenda for issues like revising media ownership rules. The confirmation of nominee Robert McDowell had been held up by Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana as a bargaining chip over the reconstruction of levees in her state. On April 27th, Landrieu's communications director confirmed that the senator had lifted her hold after the White House agreed to seek $2.2 billion in funding for levee reconstruction. McDowell has already been approved by the Senate Commerce Committee. However, a speedy vote by the full Senate is not yet guaranteed. There are press reports that Senator Jay Rockefeller, a Democrat of West Virginia, has placed his own hold on McDowell over the issue of universal service provisions. And those are provisions that dictate how things like telephone service will be provided to people, especially in poor and rural areas. However, Rockefeller's office will neither confirm nor deny the reports that he's placed a hold. Any senator has the right to block a presidential nomination for any reason and may do so anonymously. A supermajority of 60 votes is necessary to break such a block. McDowell, a former lobbyist for small telephone companies, is expected to be confirmed easily by the Senate whenever his nomination actually comes up for a vote. Until then, Republicans still won't have their typical majority at the FCC under Republican administration, and Chairman Martin will continue to have to delay controversial items like the proposed AT&T Bell South merger. And ownership and consolidation are not just issues for the dominant English language broadcast media in the U.S. Univision, the nation's largest Spanish language television broadcaster, is up on the auction block, and potential buyers are starting to line up. According to press reports, both Disney, owner of ABC, and CBS have recently had talks with Univision management about buying the network. Another potential buyer is Grupo Televisa, Mexico's largest broadcaster, which already owns 11% of Univision shares and provides the network's most popular telenovela soap opera programs that bring in almost 40% of Univision's revenue. One sticking point for Televisa is the law that prevents a foreign person or company from owning a U.S. broadcast station. Back in the 1980s, that same law stood in the way of News Corp's Rupert Murdoch, a native of Australia, from buying the stations that became the Fox TV network. Murdoch solved that problem by becoming a U.S. citizen, Apparently, he didn't have the same problems many other immigrants often have. Televisa is working on finding U.S.-based equity partners to help pull off a deal if it's able to outbid other U.S.-based suitors. As the nation's most watched Spanish-language broadcaster, Univision could be a very valuable property for Disney or CBS, especially since, as the audience for broadcast network TV slowly shrinks, the audience for Spanish television continues to grow. NBC's owner, General Electric, is not pursuing Univision and would probably be prevented from buying it because the company already owns the number two Spanish network, Telemundo. Televisa is working on finding you... I'm sorry, I already told you that. So I'll tell you something I haven't already. Only last week, I did tell you about the unlicensed station Power 103.3 operating in the Quad Cities area of Illinois and Iowa. The station was visited by the FCC recently, but not shut down because the station operators wouldn't let the agent in. This week, I have more details about the station. It operates out of Bettendorf, Iowa, and the FCC was acting on complaints filed by stations owned by Clear Channel and Cumulus, two of the nation's largest radio station owners. The most interesting thing about Power 103.3 is that the station's operators are attempting to use the Code of Federal Regulations as a defense, claiming that provisions permitting the emergency operation of an unlicensed station during emergencies cover their station, since the U.S. is currently engaged in a war. According to John Anderson at DIYmedia.net, three other stations have attempted to use this defense in the past, although it has not been tested in court. And that's a bit of what's going on in our media environment. You are listening to Media Geek. Check it out online, www.mediageek.net. There's the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views on our media environment. You can also get this here radio program there. It's radio.mediageek.net. Downloaded in MP3 of the open source Ogg Vorbis format. You can also subscribe to the podcast to get it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. So in case you missed a program and want to listen to it again, you can always make sure you can hear Media Geek online, radio.mediageek.net. And if you have any comments about the program, I'd love to hear it, really, truly, honestly. Send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. So as I mentioned at the top of the program, a big issue right now in Washington about communications is network neutrality. And it's an issue I've been following here on Media Geek for pretty much the entire year so far. And the whole point of network neutrality is an effort to try and enshrine in law principles that say an internet service provider cannot discriminate on the type of internet content that a subscriber can get. So if you have an internet connection, be it through, especially through broadband or DSL, cable modem, or even through a dial-up modem like AOL or other services, that provider should not be able to say you can't get streaming video, downloaded audio, any sort of legal content. They should not be able to tell you you can't get it or degrade that service. You should be able to get all of that at the full speed that you pay for every single month. But recently, within the last 6 to 8 months, executives from Bell South, AT&T, and other telecommunications companies have said that they believe the providers of streaming video, rich broadband content, are getting a free ride because they're not paying for the connection to consumers' homes, even though they are all paying for a connection to the internet. And they'd like to start charging companies like Google or Yahoo, or maybe even community radio stations, maybe even Media Geek, for the bandwidth we use to connect to their consumers, who of course have already paid for that bandwidth. And there are lots of other ways in which a lack of network neutrality could spell trouble, could mean less choice for you, could mean a less free internet, different than we know it now. So a diverse group of persons and companies and organizations is coming together to try and lobby Congress and organize the public, organize average folks like you and me, to push for network neutrality, to make this part of the law of the land. A conference call was held on April 24th, organized by Free Press, the media reform organization, and a new group, a coalition called Save the Internet. And together we had Vint Cerf, who is the internet evangelist from Google, who is also one of the original architects of the internet as we know it, Craig Newmark, who is the founder of Craigslist. Also, the Gun Owners of America, a very right-wing, by their own admission, a very right-wing gun ownership group is part of this coalition. Also, AfroNetizen.com, which helps to politically organize persons of African-American descent on the internet. Public Knowledge, which also is an organization looking to make sure that there are civil liberties online. And Mark Cooper from the Consumer Federation of America. All these folks got together on this conference call on April 24th to talk about this issue to reporters and to bloggers, trying to explain why this is important. So I have some excerpts of this, because they will be able to tell you better than I can tell you why network neutrality is important. So we're going to start this audio from the call with Vint Cerf, original architect of the internet and the internet evangelist from Google.
I hope that you'll notice that the diversity of the coalition underscores the importance of this issue. Many of us have not worked together before, but in this matter we are fully aligned. The last decade of Internet's evolution, maybe we should call it revolution, has been marked by innovation. And that innovation has been a consequence of the open and neutral access that the Internet has afforded up until now. You didn't have to get permission from an ISP to start companies like Yahoo and Google and Amazon and eBay and many, many hundreds of others. You simply got on the net and you tried out your new business idea. The proposals that are coming from the telcos and from the cable companies, as exemplified in some of this legislation, destroys that neutrality. It looks like it would interfere significantly with the ability to innovate in the network environment. And in a time when even the president understands the importance of American competitive strength, this whole American competitive initiative is an indication of that, innovation is absolutely essential in this network environment. None of us, at least I would not argue that we shouldn't recover the costs of the broadband build-out. That's not the issue. The issue is what business model makes sense. And the proposals so far have not been very sensible in terms of preserving freedom of access to the network for everyone. Some people take the view that nothing bad has happened, so you don't need any legislation at all. My reaction to this is, well, there isn't any guarantee that there will be a reaction to abuses, some of which have been threatened already, unless there is some legislation which essentially constrains what the broadband providers are permitted to do.
Thanks a lot, Vint. With that, we're going to turn it over to Craig Fields, who is the Director of Internet Operations over at Gun Owners of America. Craig?
Thanks. Gun Owners of America is the nation's second largest gun rights lobby with just over 300,000 members. We are almost 100% legislative in nature. But at heart, we're a grassroots activism organization. Our ability to move people on the Hill is directly tied to our ability to communicate to our members and supporters, many of whom are much, much more active than the average, association joiner. The Internet has quite honestly been a boon to us in that regard. And in fact, it used to be there were some fights we couldn't even get into because there wasn't enough time to set up a good snail mail campaign. Well, the politicians can't hide behind time anymore. In today's world, every person is a keyboard activist, every blogger a potential Patrick Henry, and certainly every organization has the ability to quickly and affordably get its message out there. This whole concept sort of turns the free market on top of its head. We're far to the right of most of the organizations presented here, and we're pretty much free market type of guys, even though our issue is guns. But when you have a situation which is basically a government-supported oligopoly, then you have to look at it and say, as long as government is making the rules, those rules have to include network neutrality in order to ensure that the goods and services and ideas that succeed in the marketplace are allowed to do so. You basically have a handful of major telecoms, all of which have internal anti-gun policies, who control, if you will, the very lifeblood of the Internet. And if you allow them to determine which good services and ideas prosper, even if you leave political bias out of it, simple greed takes over, and they will shut out those people and organizations who elect to use hardware, software, or anything that is provided by one of their competitors rather than by themselves. And so in a very, very strange situation, what we have is the necessity of government intervention to ensure a free marketplace of ideas. And if the major telecoms think that they can in any way paint or characterize opposition to what is basically a power grab on their part as either a liberal, far left, or anti-free market attack, they are sadly mistaken. Because we're on the right, and we look forward to joining with individuals and organizations from all across the political spectrum in getting our message through to Congress. Whenever you see people on the far left and the far right joining together about something Congress is getting ready to do, it's been my experience that what Congress is getting ready to do is basically un-American.
Now I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Newmark, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist. Craig?
Hey, my title is actually customer service rep and founder. And in that capacity, I've spent a lot of time working with people at big telecoms. I tend to work with people from the middle in. And also as a consumer, I've worked and talked with a lot of telecom workers. They tell me in practice that if their own companies get the abilities that we're talking about, they're going to use them to discriminate against the little guys. That is, you know, if they had this power, that would have been a big problem for Craigslist when we started. And again, according to the line workers I speak to at big telecom companies, the companies would use these new privileges to hurt the little guys, and I don't think this should happen.
Next, we're going to have Mr. Chris Rabb, who's the founder of AfroNetizen.com.
Thank you. This is Chris Rabb, founder and chief evangelist of AfroNetizen. AfroNetizen is an online community dedicated to informing, inspiring, and engaging AfroNetizens and the communities they touch. I founded this social network in 1999 as a civic enterprise in order to share substantive news and information with friends, family members, and colleagues who lived all across the country. Civic-minded, intellectually curious, and substance-hungry folks who did not have the time or inclination to troll for good content, germane to people of African descent. In largely viral fashion, I went from about 100 people on an informal email list to over 10,000 people via Yahoo groups in less than 18 months. All of this without any direct out-of-pocket expenses or the permission or undue surcharges of telcos. Thank you.
Next, we'll have Gigi Sohn with Public Knowledge. She's the president. Gigi?
Yeah, hi, everybody. Public Knowledge is a nonprofit organization that works at the intersection of intellectual property and technology policy, and we are extremely proud to be part of this diverse coalition. I think everybody previous to me has talked about, you know, why the Bell and the cable company's plans will be detrimental to innovation, to free speech, and to democracy, and so I won't dwell on that anymore. What I'd like to talk about is what we're really asking for, because I think the other side has done a very good job of saying, you know, we're not clear, what does net neutrality mean? So let me tell you what we want. We want a simple principle that says that broadband network providers cannot discriminate against independent voices, that they cannot favor the content that they own or the content in which they have a financial interest. Very plain and simple. We want a non-discrimination principle. That's the way the Internet was regulated for many years and up until just last year when the FCC and the courts lifted those restrictions. That was the way the Internet became great, through a non-discrimination principle. So that's number one. Number two, we want to prohibit tiering schemes that impose fees to deliver Internet content on top of the fees that folks already pay. So when Ed Whitaker says that Google and Yahoo and Public Knowledge don't pay to get on the Internet, he's absolutely 100% wrong. We already pay, and we don't want to have to pay a second time. And third is we want strong federal enforcement. Through a complaint process, that's fine, but there have to be penalties if cable and telephone companies violate the non-discrimination principle.
And lastly, we're going to have Mr. Mark Cooper with the Consumer Federation of America. Mark is the director of research.
Thanks a lot. We've actually been doing this for almost two decades. At the end of the late 1980s, the telcos tried to assert this kind of control over the network, and we helped to stop them. In the late 90s, we petitioned the FCC to adopt network neutrality for cable operators, and we went to court with the others, and that was the case that was decided last year, which opened the door to the policy that the network operators want to be able to discriminate and exclude, to pick and choose the services that will use their network. As Gigi said, this is not the way the network has operated. Anyone who thinks telco executives will be able to better figure out what people want hasn't looked at the history of the Internet and the telcos in the last 30 years. The presence of gatekeepers drives out innovation. Restrictions on the use of functionality raises prices. So now is the time to fix this with the simple principles that Gigi has identified. We want consumers to pay for a level of functionality and then let the Internet economy work its magic. The innovators will figure out all manner of services to fill those pipes. They will have no trouble recovering their costs from the public.
And as a diverse coalition of people and organizations, you last heard Mark Cooper from the Consumer Federation of America, all coming together to save the Internet, talking about why we need the principle of network neutrality enshrined in law to protect the operation of the Internet as we know it today, where we are free to download and send content as much as we like without it being inhibited by our Internet service providers. Now, one issue that comes up in this debate is this issue of discrimination, which would be the ability of an Internet service provider like AT&T or Verizon or your cable company to either block certain content or, more likely, slow down certain content, not provide a speedy download for certain video or audio services or other types of content. And what comes up as an argument often, especially from the telecom industry, which does not want network neutrality put into law, is, well, they say there hasn't been any sort of discrimination. What, you know, so why are you worried about it? And Tim Carr from Free Press, who is also in on this call, addressed that question directly.
But it's on the question of discrimination. This is not theoretical. It is already happening. We have in Canada, for example, a leading ISP that has cut access to a website from a union that was in negotiations with that same ISP. Earlier this month, in a different realm, AOL blocked emails from a coalition called the DearAOL.com Coalition that was attempting to stop AOL from implementing a pay-to-send email tax. So it's a slightly different realm, but when given the opportunity, these organizations will discriminate, and not only will, they already have discriminated.
This is Vince. I wonder if I could jump in for just one second. Let's suppose, for the sake of argument, that there has not been such discrimination, although I think you've heard from a few people expressing concerns about past events. But even if there is none now, there is an open question whether there would be or could be some if it becomes in the interest of the cable operators to enhance their business models in that way. So part of, I think, what many of us are asking is assurance that that won't happen, that the cable operators in their role as broadband providers will continue to operate an openly accessible portion of the Internet.
And that was Vince Cerf, the Internet evangelist with Google. Before that, Tim Carr from Free Press, talking about actual instances of discrimination of Internet content and what we would want, what much of the public would want, in order to guarantee that that does not happen in the future. Now, an amendment to a telecommunications bill came up for vote on April 26th in the House Commerce Committee. It was an amendment offered by Representative Markey of Michigan to enshrine network neutrality provisions in law. And it was defeated 34-22. It was defeated bipartisan, although it was mostly Democrats who voted in favor of this particular provision. It does not mean that network neutrality is dead in the House. But it does mean that such a amendment now has to move to the House floor. It has to come not from the committee, where it might have had an easier time, but Representative Markey is now looking for support from his fellow House members to put network neutrality into this bill from the floor if it comes up for a vote this week of May 1st. What may happen to this bill, though, this telecommunications bill, is it may actually get rerouted to the Judiciary Committee, because Representative Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin, who is the chair of that committee, would like his committee to look at the telecommunications bill before it gets voted on by a full House. Apparently, Sensenbrenner and his committee are worried about issues of competition. And the primary meat of this bill is not network neutrality, but is actually allowing the nation's largest telephone companies to begin offering cable TV services nationwide over broadband internet lines without having to negotiate individually with local municipalities. And we've been talking about this quite a bit. I mean, MediaGeek, the last few weeks, it's an issue called the national franchise. And so this bill that passed through the Senate Commerce Committee would authorize the existence of a national franchise. And the House Judiciary Committee, which worries about things like antitrust and competition, would like to take a look at it too. So we have a bit of a power gambit going on in the House. And both opportunities at the Judiciary Committee and on the floor of the House to get network neutrality provisions added to this bill so that the likes of AT&T and Verizon may get something such as a national franchise, an easier ability to roll out their own cable TV services. In exchange, they might have to accept network neutrality written into law. Now, if you want to learn more about how your representatives have voted on the issue or may vote on the issue, who they are, and how you might take action, go to savetheinternet.com. There's a map that shows you the people who voted on the Commerce Committee. One of them was from Illinois, which is the home state of the Media Geek program, Bobby Rush, who voted against the network neutrality provision. And there are folks who say he shouldn't have been voting at all, that there is a conflict of interest because, according to a report in the Chicago Sun-Times on April 25th, the charitable arm of AT&T, formerly known as SBC, donated $1 million to the rebirth of Englewood Community Development Corporation, a nonprofit founded by Bobby Rush, in which he and his wife sit on the board of directors. Josh Silver from Free Press said Rush must stay out of any votes that impact AT&T until investigators can get to the bottom of this apparent quid pro quo. And people are especially upset with Rush since he does represent a poorer district in Chicago, Illinois, which is very likely to possibly be redlined out and not get any of these advanced cable TV broadband services from AT&T and other companies under the current law as being looked at. And of course, it's not just the House. The Senate will have to look at passing its own telecommunications legislation, which could have network neutrality provisions added into it. That's still sitting at the Senate Commerce Committee, which has had a little bit slower going at it. It's a smaller committee, and so the power struggles are a bit more potent there, and Senate tends to operate in a slightly different way. But you can also address your senators. But there's more information at savetheinternet.com. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Riesmandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at Radio.MediaGeek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at MediaGeek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowe. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, WYQZ in Warrenton-Bealeton, Virginia, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comments you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.